So we just finished discussing how we must take responsibility for everything, even when we are trying to help another person. That when we communicate with another person to help them and they're not listening to us, we have to realize that that is coming from our judgment on them. And even if we don't feel like we have, that we're judging them and that we feel like we're fully accepting them, the easy way to know if that's true is by the way they are responding to what we are telling them. If they listen, then we know, in fact, that we've learned to unconditionally love and accept this person. If they aren't, don't put the wrongdoing on them. It has to do with the way we are delivering the message. Now we're going to talk about flaws in others and how to have a proper perspective on those flaws. So firstly, very often the only way we can recognize our own unhealthiness is when we see it being acted out by another. I have often had the experience where I said to myself, wow, so that's what I look like when I do the very same thing. In other words, when we see unhealthy behavior in others, it very often helps us get in touch with our own unhealthiness. And very often, this is a huge blessing. This is the reason why God has this happening for us, that we experience this flaw in another person, because it's speaking to us, beginning within. A simple example of this is when we see politicians who always act out of their own self-interest and say or do whatever will serve them best. This infuriates any decent person. But instead of it infuriating us, we can look at it and ask ourselves, am I any better? How much of my life is run by self-interest? Perhaps the way for me to respond to seeing this ugliness is to remove as much of it from my own life as possible. Perhaps this is the way I can begin fixing the world of this problem that disgusts me so much by beginning with fixing it within me. We can, as most people do, continue to point fingers at the politicians. From my observation, it does not seem to have helped much. The proper response is beginning within, focusing on what I have influence over, and that, of course, is myself more than anyone else. Secondly, we do have an obligation to help the other person. We do, as we've discussed in the previous video. Let's return to our earlier analogy of someone who's drowning. Until now, we've been discussing ourselves as the one who is drowning, which is why we say hurtful things to other people, because we're drowning from a lack of worthiness. But hopefully at this point in the course, we are not as desperate for our oxygen, which is our worthiness, as we were at the beginning of the course. When we see another person acting in an unhealthy manner, what does it tell us? It simply tells us one thing about them. They are drowning and are desperate for oxygen. They will say and do some very mean things to the people around them, not because they really want to hurt those people, but because they themselves are hurting. They are in a state of desperation. They are lacking oxygen. They are drowning. When someone hurls an insult at us, and we can remain focused on what's truly going on with them, as opposed to focusing on ourselves, we should remind ourselves that they are drowning. What are they drowning from? They're drowning from a lack of worthiness. What do they need? An indication that they are worthy. It is at such a moment that it is so vitally important, and it would be such a special gift if we were able to find a way to show them that we accept them and love them, even in the face of what they've just told us. In fact, it's an enormous opportunity to take our relationship with them to another level. This is because the only time that we can truly demonstrate to someone that we unconditionally love them is when they have just done something which violates our relationship, and we still show them that we will permit nothing to break our relationship because our acceptance of them is unconditional. In other words, when we clear ourselves of personalizing an event and can look at a situation objectively, and with clarity, it frees us to be present for what's going on with the other person. We become so powerful that we can be focused on them while they're insulting us. This gives us the ability to heal their true hurt, that they are drowning and are in need of worthiness. Then, instead of the insult turning into a fight that can last days or weeks, we can resolve it right then. Only unbelievably powerful people can do this. And those are people who live their life beginning within. Additionally, whenever we see a person in their moment of weakness or when they show a flaw, it offers us an enormous opportunity. In times like these, we have to show them unconditional love. When they behave as we would like, it is understandable that we love them. Unconditional love is only demonstrated when they don't behave as we'd like. This is a very powerful opportunity. The moment my child breaks the china dish is the exact moment that I can show them I love them and that they're far more important to me than a china dish. Tomorrow I can speak to them about carrying china and whether they should or shouldn't, but now I can just hug them and say I love you and you're just as wonderful as before you dropped the dish. I'm not saying that we should overlook the wrongs of others. I am saying that when we are healthy, we can hear them from a place of acceptance. At the same time, they must be held fully accountable for any wrongdoing, no question. What we need to learn, though, is that holding someone accountable is not synonymous with judging their self-worth and being angry at them. Let's use an example of my child talking disrespectfully to me. He's probably frustrated or angry, which is an indication that he's drowning. His disrespectful behavior is unacceptable. However, if I only deal with the disrespect and not with his core issue, I will not solve my son's problem. If I hug him and I tell him I love him, yes, while he's disrespecting me, I hug him and tell him I love him, and then I tell him, without any anger, that he will need to stay in his room for 15 minutes as a consequence of his disrespectful talk, I have been an exemplary parent. Sometimes it's not dealing with the wrong now, but maybe even tomorrow. We do need to deal with the wrong behavior, but we first need to address the fundamental issue, which then sets this young child on the healthy path for the rest of their life. The only way any parent will have the presence of mind to do this when being disrespected is when they have internalized a life beginning within. Then we won't personalize our child's comment. We won't depend on our child liking us for us to feel like a good parent. This gives us the presence of mind to be there for them in their need to know that they are worthy. This also gives us the presence of mind to educate them with discipline without getting angry. Have you ever seen a parent respond to their child yelling at them by going over to them in the midst of the child's fit where they're yelling with anger at their parent and giving them a big hug and repeatedly telling them how much they love them? It's rare to see a parent responding so brilliantly. When someone is in a state of anger, judgment, or any other form of unhealthiness, they are announcing to the world one thing: I am insecure, I feel unworthy and unaccepted. We need to learn to see past their actions and their words to the core of what they are really saying. And their behavior is telling us everything that they're saying, and that is that I feel insecure and unworthy. Here's a simple visualization that can transform the way you respond to negativity that's being spewed by someone around you. Visualize the person who is acting out in an unhealthy way as literally drowning in a pool of water. This will help you remain focused on their desperation and act immediately and accordingly. You see, as long as we get caught up in their craziness and we begin defending ourselves from what they have said, we are not seeing clearly. We are letting our own bias and defensiveness create a false version of what is going on. We are unable to be there for them and to demonstrate healthy behavior to them because we got lost in our own fear of unworthiness, which we begin desperately defending. My good friend, Dr. Richard Leidas, once explained this to me as a whirlwind. Many unhealthy people thrive by creating whirlwinds with the attempt to draw everyone around them into it. Many people are addicted to drama. Drama is essentially a whirlwind. The key is to always remember, he told me, that when someone creates a whirlwind, they always remember not to get caught up in it. That would be similar to the rescuer being drowned by the very person he's trying to save. We always have to stand outside of the whirlwind and maintain clarity on why this person is creating this whirlwind. To summarize, the only way we can possibly help others with their unhealthiness is if we have first helped ourselves with our own unhealthiness. Once we are healthy, we can respond to an unhealthy situation with a clear mind, with a clear mindset, and be available to provide the other person with what they're really seeking. This is the reason why beginning within not only helps you, but helps every relationship that you have. This is very, very powerful. And we're going to have an exercise to help you actualize this when someone else is acting out in an unhealthy way. Let's speak about another point in regards to our relationship with others. And that is creating space for another person. One of the hardest things for us to do is make space for another person. Making space for another essentially means letting the conversation be about them. The only way we can make space for another is when we are secure, when we feel worthy, when we are not dependent on another to feel good about ourselves. The greatest gift that we can give to any other human being is space for them to be themselves without any judgment. In order to do this, we need to learn how to listen. Not just listen with our ears, but listen with our heart. I often have large gatherings around my Shabbat table, usually 40 plus people. I typically pose a question, and we go around the table, and everyone is asked to share their answer to that question. It is quite common that someone will give a truthful answer, you know, which is not conventional or in alignment with the values of other people around the table. And on occasion, another guest will question how they can say or believe that. And I always remind the other guest who's questioning that we're not here to determine whether anyone is stating the truth. We are here to give every single person the space to discover what they believe or feel in regards to this question. It's to give everyone the space to discover where they are at in relationship with the question. In other words, we are here as a group to unconditionally accept whatever another person shares, no matter how we personally feel about it. The reality is that most people don't have a single person in the world who makes space for them as they are at any given moment. And this is because most people live from without, and therefore feel too insecure to create space for another person. Someone may have parents, a spouse, siblings, and good friends. You can have all of those relationships, and yet none of them are healthy enough to be there for them. When I say be there for them, I mean making space for them and accepting them as being who they are. So what do we do about this? You probably figured it out. We begin within. We stop insisting that they change and start accepting us. We cannot change them. We become the change we want to see in the world around us. We implement everything we have learned until we become healthy enough to make space for others. As we do that, we model healthier behavior, which brings others closer to their own healthy behavior. Someone once asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe, "Rebbe, what exactly do you do? What do you do? You're a great rabbi. What do you do? And why are you admired by so many people?" And the Rebbe replied, "I try to be a good friend." Incredulous, the man blurted out, "A friend? That's all you do?" Unfazed, the Rebbe responded with a question of his own. "How many friends do you have?" "I have many," the man said. "Well, let me define a friend for you and then tell me how many friends you have. A friend is someone in whose presence you can think aloud without worrying about being taken advantage of. A friend is someone who suffers with you when you are in pain and rejoices in your joy. A friend is someone who looks out for you and always has your best interest in mind. In fact, a true friend is like an extension of yourself. The Rebbe then asked with a smile, "Now, how many friends like that do you have?" Simple, yet very profound. When we have internalized all of the above, we will see an enormous advancement in our ability to love another as ourselves. Going back to what I mentioned earlier, the more we accept and love ourselves, the more we can accept and love others. This is because we cannot reach deeper within another than we can reach in our own self. When we begin witnessing in our very own life, being fully present for others, even in their moments of weakness, which is the key, and even in their moments of fault, we will realize the power that we've attained. We will realize the power that we can bring to others. And we will realize that we are truly making this world a much better place.